time. There are lots of topics that are up for debate in 2016. There's a wide open field. Our candidates, a lot of very strong Republican candidates with different varying strengths, most of whom would be some form of movement conservative, which makes this a very good, very interesting field. But there is one topic that we've heard a bit about in the whole, you know, race for 2016. It's not quite at the foreground right now for many people. It tends to be marginalized as coming from either liberal or libertarian camps. And that is the topic of criminal justice reform. When you hear those words, it's usually not thought of as synonymous with conservative or part of a conservative vision. But what would something like that look like? I mean, we're interested in law, we're interested in justice and in doing things the right way, keeping our society safe, but also protecting an individual's rights as well. All of that kind of comes together in a discussion about how our criminal justice system works. So what would a conservative, or better yet, a constitutional criminal justice reform plan even look like? Well, that's where we're going to go for the next few minutes with Derek Cohen of Right on Crime. Derek, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Rebecca.
Absolutely. We like to talk about things from a bit of a different perspective, and this certainly seems like an issue that we ought to be addressing, but I think it's getting politicized pretty heavily. So I guess we can either buck against the politicization of, I hope that's a word, of the trend, or we can go with it and use the 2016 cycle to educate people on what a conservative vision for criminal justice reform might actually look like. So let's start there. What is the vision of Right on Crime? What do you guys do, and what do you want to see happen in society?
Well, Rebecca, put most simply, Right on Crime is the conservative criminal justice reform campaign launched by the Texas Public Policy Foundation. If I had to boil it down, it's all about protecting the taxpayers, both in terms of personal safety, restitution if need be, and making sure they're getting the most bang for their buck in the actual criminal justice system, making sure that, when offenders are punished as they should be, that they're punished in a way most appropriate to bring about the best outcome.
And I assume that you're looking at the situation right now and saying that's not happening, which is why the term reform is necessary.
Certainly. Now, as you well know, from the late 80s to the, all throughout the 90s, we had a pretty severe spike in crime, mostly due to, drug-related violence and a number of other factors. The go-to response in correcting this was trying to penalize and incarcerate our way out of the problem. While nobody here at Right on Crime or the Texas Public Policy Foundation would say that, prisons do not serve a purpose, or that, punishment does not serve a purpose, quite mm-hmm. the opposite. It's just that when you look at it as a one-size-fits-all approach, you're going to widen the net and, you're going to catch people in that net that can be handled, in different alternative ways that, again, both reduce the burden on the taxpayer and bring about better outcomes, both, proximately in recidivism rates and distally in issues like their ability to make restitution and their, just a general sanctity of the family of the individual that do offend. So this actually, in a way, facilitates redemption as well.
Mm. Well, and let's kind of paint a picture of the depth and the nature and the scope of the problem as you see it.
Sure. Like I said, a lot of this arose out of a lot of the reaction to the crime wave that came through in the 80s and the 90s. So what the problem is, as we see it, tends to be a rather steep over that time period, a rather steep incarceration rate. Now, as the incarceration rate went up, the general crime rate started to trail downward. And so, one of the, at superficial, at first blush, one might say, okay, well, clearly what we're doing here is we're incarcerating our way out of the problem. But we actually see nowadays where we start enacting some of these more, these more data-driven reforms, mm-hmm. we're actually seeing places that are reforming their criminal justice system, Texas is just one example, places that are reforming their criminal justice system are still enjoying the reduced crime rate, sometimes at a much greater amount, and we're also, reducing the burden passed on the taxpayers. We're reducing the size and scope of the carceral state, if you will.
All right. Well, I'd like to get into some of the details on this. We're coming up against a break, but if you'll hang on with us, Derek. Derek Cohen is here. His organization is called Right on Crime, and they are an outreach or a project of the Texas Public Policy Foundation, and their focus is a conservative position on criminal justice reform. And I'd like to talk with Derek when we come back about some of the specific ideas, as well as some of the objections or maybe misconceptions about what they do and what their vision is. And we'll see how this might impact 2016 as well. All of this coming up on the other side of the break. Stay tuned.
You are listening to Steve Dace.
I like you.
No sellouts, no surrender. Steve Dace.
Rebecca Maxwell in for Steve today, talking with Derek Cohen of the group Right on Crime, and they advocate for a conservative criminal justice reform plan. And Derek, I think right off the bat, what normally happens in political debates when people talk about criminal justice reform, for some reason it's become synonymized in people's minds with drug policy, which we then associate with free the weed, man. But is that really what it's about in your mind? What are some of the big issues at play?
Well, I think some of the big issues at play is not so much, as you mentioned, drug policy. When while that is a cogent driver of correctional populations, I think the bigger issue at play is the actual system, is the actual processes that we go through. And once something's established as a crime, where do we go from the point of arrest, from the point of the discharge of that case?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we just, one of the things that we found many inefficiencies in is kind of the way business has been going about as usual. Before we talked about, the reliance on, I'd say iron and brick facilities, when truth is, if you have, say, a low-risk offender who, has been, verified by a validated risk assessment instrument, that could serve time in the community under strict probation conditions, this not only lowers the fiscal impact onto the state, it also is going to allow, if there was an actual victim of a crime, that they would be better able to make restitution to them. It would also allow their family to remain whole, and so that they don't have to rely on the state then. While, say, a father or mother is, incarcerated.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've mentioned that word, I know, a couple of times, and it's a word that I am a big fan of in this whole discussion, and that is restitution. I'm not really sure we focus very much, and I'm not sure why we don't focus very much on the concept of restitution after a crime has been committed. So let's spend just a little bit of time on that and why that's important.
Sure. Sure. Well, I mean, we can go all the way back to, to the Middle Ages, where we kind of have I would say the apparatus of the state. Now it was the crown, obviously, back then, basically usurped the individual as victim whenever, it's a violation of the king's peace as opposed to a violation of someone's natural rights.
Mm-hmm.
And so from there, that common law tradition followed us over across the ocean. And now when, we have a, any sort of criminal adjudication, it's, state versus so-and-so. It's a violation of the state's peace. And I think that we are starting to see a little bit of pushback there, too, with some of the alternatives that have been suggested in Texas. Just this last session, the legislature passed a bill that allows, victim offender mediation programs, should the prosecutor and the judge and both the victim and the offender assent to it. So that offers an alternative. It's by no means prescriptive, but it offers an alternative to the more traditional way of looking at this as a violation against the state.
Mm-hmm.
Restitution more writ large, if we have a one-size-fits-all approach where, a certain swath of offenders are going to jail, even if they are low risk and pose no threat to the community, well, your ability to, not to be glib, but your ability to make restitution while stamping license plates is fairly limited. So that not only do you have that individual serving the time for the, well, I should say rightfully serving the time for the crime they committed, But you're also leaving the victim out in the rain on that as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that sort of plays into the conversation about mandatory minimums and what the problem is with that. I don't pretend to be an expert. That's why we're talking to you. So why do you think, and your group, I mean, it's pretty obvious that you've chosen that specific aspect of our current criminal justice system to say, yeah, this isn't really working for us so much. So what's the problem with mandatory minimum sentencing, and what solutions does your group propose instead?
Well, we have not delved a great deal in the mandatory minimums. Cursorily and in the abstract, we kind of understand that, you know, to establish in statute mandatory minimums is to basically divest judges of the discretion that the electorate empowers them with. Now, here in Texas, we have a direct election for our judges. So any judge is then accountable to the jurisdiction that they are a judge in.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, it generally becomes a bit nonsensical in a way if we want to say that we are going to establish this statutorily. And now this is to say nothing about having a sentencing range. But if you were to say that, you know, you have to have X number of years for a certain number of crime and that's it, or, you know, based off of certain facets of the crime, you're basically taking away the judge's ability to consider any mitigating factors or maybe any ambiguity in the criminal code. And, you know, that's why we empower judges. They have the expertise that we do not have.
Judgment, in fact. hence the name. As we kind of mentioned before, and almost it amuses me that any issue can be seen as solely belonging to one political party or one political persuasion. So, because I think that we all, as complete human beings and critical thinkers in America, should be able to have positions, understandings that are well thought out, no matter what camp we tend to find ourselves voting for. And I find that conservatives don't talk about this topic very much. I haven't heard it come up a great deal in 2016. I think I've heard Rand Paul talk about it and some of the legislation that he's trying to propose. I haven't heard a lot of other people talk about it to any great length. Why do you think that is? Why does it seem like conservative is on the opposite end of the frame with the issues involved in criminal justice reform?
Oh, well, actually, I would. I think that we're actually seeing a great deal of it, especially considering, or especially compared to some races in the past.
Mm.
Rick Perry mentioned during his announcement speech some of the changes that have happened under his watch here in Texas. He mentioned that during his tenure, I think between 2009 and the present, we've closed three full-size adult facilities. And of course, you know, you mentioned before the break, what are some of the criticisms? You know, one of the criticisms we tend to get from the left is, oh, well, this is just something in the effort of supporting privatization. Well, you know, if you're closing facilities, that's, you know, whether public prison or private prison, you know, that is closing facilities. And, you know, there's no benefit to be had, public or private, there, it's some sort of a pecuniary gain for a private interest in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that definitely stands in stark contrast to some of the narrative that, you know, some of the critique we do get from the left. And I would also say that, you know, I think it's going to become more and more of an issue, especially with, I believe Senator Cruz has already mentioned the mandatory minimums in the Second Chance Act. From the Senate Judiciary Committee and how that's moving through there, and then, you know, John Cornyn as well, the other Texas senator. I believe it was about a month ago, maybe a month and a half, he actually forwarded the Corrections Act, which highly emphasizes faith-based programs in reentry.
Mm.
So you generally see it taking up a much larger part of the conservative discussion than in years past, and I think that it's not. You know, reading tea leaves or checking the prevailing wind conditions. I think
right.
These are, you know, some of the proposals that we've seen thus far have just been, you know, incredibly well thought out.
Oh, cool.
based off the evidence and promise some pretty good savings and some pretty good positive effects.
Well, here in my backyard of Iowa, we're broadcasting this nationally today, but we've got a lot of candidates and we get to ask them a lot of questions. So I imagine that now that we've had this conversation, it'll be on the forefront of some of our listeners' minds. If people want to get more informed about what you guys do at your organization, where's the best place for them to go?
Oh, well, certainly. They can go to rightoncrime.com, and that is the campaign's website, and that'll feature content from our analysts, and it'll feature content from national outlets, basically anything that illustrates the benefits of conservative criminal justice reform. Or if they have interest in Texas-specific reforms that have happened either in this session or in sessions past, they can go to texaspolicy.com, and that's the site of the Texas Public Policy Foundation.
Gotcha.
And we're right there under the Center for Effective Justice.
Cool. Derek Cohen, thank you so much for your time, and I feel like we all learned something.
Excellent.
You.
Well, thanks for having me, Rebecca.